Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host, Jen Shortridge, and some guy who says he's my brother from the same mother.
Me.
Joseph Dean Shortridge.
Hello.
Ooh, Joey. What's going on?
Nothing.
Okay. Thanks for listening. All right. That's our running joke. We said that last time. But okay. So, Joe.
I need to think of a new joke.
Yeah.
My wit is not that sharp.
Okay. There's a squirrel, by the way.
Again?
Every time we tape, the squirrel sits outside on the neighbor's fence and looks in at us.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
Here's what's going on.
What is going on?
I started my Christmas shopping.
I was in store yesterday and they were playing Christmas music.
I know. I'm like, really? Halloween just ended.
Ended.
Can't talk. I'm not drunk. Oh, Joe's waiting. Squirrel.
Oh, wait. It's coming this way.
He's coming this way?
He is coming this way. Hope the window is not open.
We need to name him. We must give him name, Joe.
Nope. He's going away now.
All right.
Sorry about that, folks.
Yeah,
I saw a squirrel.
Squirrel. Alrighty. So, Joe.
Yes. Serious
Halloween's
show.
Coming up. Or Halloween Christmas. I don't even know what day or time it is. We've been so busy. We have so much going on with our paranormal things. Oh, we can tell everybody about, we had a field trip to a haunted location.
Haunted location?
Yeah. So, Joe, just tell you and me because nobody else is listening. Yeah. But tell our audience where we went.
We went to the Toledo Yacht Club.
Oh, yeah. We went to the Toledo Yacht Club. Oh,
that's what you're talking about.
That, too. Okay. So, Joe and I went to two haunted Toledo locations. And we had some really interesting things went on. We went to the Toledo Repertoire Theater.
Oh, that one.
We go to so many.
I know. I mean, last week we were in Mid-Michigan.
I know.
The week before we were in Toledo at the Rep Theater. I thought you were talking about the Toledo Yacht Club. So what we did was Harold from Toledo Ohio Ghost Hunter Society has a class at Owens, and they're for their field trip. At the end of the class, they take the whole class to haunted location. They do a ghost hunt. So that was the Toledo Yacht Club. Then, a week after that, we went to the Toledo Repertoire Theater, which was really cool. I didn't know there was going to be an actual play.
I didn't either.
So we watched the play, which is the first time I've ever been to one.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, there was like a big group ghost hunt. And it was cool.
So it's a haunted historic old theater. And it's been probably, over 100 years old? It was things before it was a theater. It was a church at one time. I think they said it was...
It was an actual home, too. Somebody bought it and lived in it as a house. Yeah,
interesting. But it has 217 seats in the theater. So it's a smaller theater. It's very intimate. And Joe and I sit in the front row.
Yeah, I've never been there. So I sit in the front row and the stage is like 5 feet above us.
I know. It was so straight bizarre up at these actors. These poor actors were just sitting in the front row, like staring at them like goobers. And they were really good. I have to give them credit because they didn't stumble.
Like we do. Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, there was a lot of dialogue and it was called It Came From Mars. And five actors?
Yeah, there was only five actors.
Like five actors in there. And they were amazing. So interesting, too, because afterwards they came down to the lobby, which is actually in the basement, which is kind of cool, and just, you know, mingled with everybody. And it's, didn't you notice it just seemed like they looked different than they did on stage?
Yeah.
But on stage, it didn't look like they were wearing any, like, strange makeup.
No, they weren't, but it's just they were in character and out of character. They were just normal people like me.
Were they paranormal on stage? But, you know, some of the claims are that there is a guy, and I can't remember his name. Is it George or Roger? Or somebody sits in the audience, a ghost sits in the audience, and he doesn't like it when they move stuff on stage or they mess up. And the one girl from Haunted Toledo, and I can't remember her name, not Sarah, the other one. I can't remember her name. Sorry. Haunted Toledo, but she was getting, I think she got poked or tugged on.
Hair pole.
Hair pole, that's right. And interesting. I would have loved to have been in that theater all by myself, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or just like two people. There was a lot of people who had come and stayed after the play.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, we got to go up in the attic where they store all the props. We went up in an office.
I spent most of the time up in that office. That was kind of interesting.
What happened with your ovulus up there?
Not much with the ovulus, mm-hmm. but the spirit box.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? Mm-hmm. What it was me and Jen were upstairs, and you had the ovulus, and you asked, how did we get up here? And it said the stairs.
Yeah.
Or did I say, you had the spirit box.
Spirit box. Yeah. And, clear as day, it said stairs.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And everybody was like, what?
Yeah.
But I had our digital recorder going with the spirit box, mm-hmm. and I've been trying to listen to it. I just haven't had the time, but Lisa and I, there's a girl, Lisa. Hi, Lisa. I know she's listening. Who was with us. We were asking some questions, and it said I'll just say his name because we talk about him all the time, but it said Chris Tillman's name. We asked something to the effect of who's leading this investigation or something like that, and it said Tillman.
That's
through the spirit box.
Come on.
So I've got to get that recorded, but I have like 2.5 hours of audio. Mm-hmm. So it's hard because it's very loud. The spirit box, I had the recorder too close to it, and it's like really loud.
Yeah, that's one bad thing about the spirit box. It's so loud, and
it's fine when it's when you're investigating, but when you're reviewing the evidence, I have to remember to just separate it at least, 6 inches. Mm-hmm. I had it like right next to it. So you'll hear me talking in normal tone, but then the spirit box just blows your eardrum out when you're listening to it with the headphones. But I've got to finish listening to that because we had another interesting thing happen. Lisa and I were in the basement and we're in this little maintenance closet. And it was probably about, 10 foot long by like 4 foot wide. And it had like a workbench in there and a lot of old like jars full of nuts and bolts and that kind of thing. And like old tools. And, you could tell it's been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a new, bunch of new stuff in there. We were in there and it was very dark feeling in there. Like just, I don't know. I can't explain it. You guys know, when your ghost hunting goes and you just have that creep out feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in there and we had the spirit box going. And I saw an orb of light in there just for a brief second. And I thought, oh, okay, well, maybe it's a reflection of my glasses, but I had my contacts in.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, no, that debunked that. And we were saying, introducing ourselves and trying to make communication, and it came back and I said, well, could you say one of our names? And it came over the recorder, said Lisa, clear as day, and she got freaked out and she wanted to leave. So we left that, but we were in the dressing room and we were having a little bit of activity in there, but there were so many people outside the door. They didn't know we were in the dressing mm-hmm. room. So it was really hard. You're listening to your evidence and you got a lot of background noise and people talking, which was kind of hard, but very cool place.
Yeah. And I mean, it was one of them nights where it wasn't really designed to be a real investigation. It was sort of like a introduction into ghost hunting for a lot of people.
Yeah. But it was just, what the cool part was, is the historic aspect of being able to go into an old historic
That's why we do this.
And appreciate the history, the architecture. Mm-hmm. We've been to a couple of theaters, and there's always haunting in theaters.
Well, yeah, because the emotion. Mm-hmm. That's why they say theaters are haunted, because there's so much emotion, mm-hmm. whether good, bad, or whatever.
Yeah, especially, if you're in a play, you're as an actor, that's what you're doing. You're I don't want to say conducting. I can't think of the right word for it, but you're portraying emotion.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Mm-hmm. I would love to go back to another play.
I was thinking the same thing because I've never been to one before. And I was talking to the actors, mm-hmm. The main character, the main actor. And we were talking and I told him, I'm like, yeah, it's the first time I've ever been to one. He's like, And I was like, yeah, send down. I was right below you. And every time they would like step close to the edge of the stage, I was like, oh, I'm going to. And he's like, the best place to sit in this one is right in the middle.
Oh, okay.
He says the sound is the best in the middle and you're level with the stage. And
all right. Yeah, we got to check that out. They have, you know, a ton of other plays that are coming up, but they always do Christmas Carol at Christmas time. And that's very popular. But, you know, like, it just was neat. There was a lot of history surrounding it. Apparently there was a young man who was shot close to that, who they make communication with.
That was, there's a story that there's a young man, and when the actors and actresses and everybody leaves the theater, they always are afraid to look up into that office that we were in.
Oh.
It's an upstairs, and it's right in the corner where you can look up and see
him in there?
And they say that they can see him looking out the window. And that's why they're always afraid to look back up in the building. And I kind of, that's one of the reasons I kind of stayed in that room to try to get something, because there were so many people mingling around the building and those wooden floors, and you know, contamination was high. So I kind of just was like, okay, I'm going to take the advantage and just stay up in this area. And I really didn't get much activity except for the spirit box saying stairs.
Mm-hmm. And then there was another legend story. I don't want to use the wrong word. Don't get mad at me. I use the wrong word if it's legend or folklore, what have you. That there was a little girl who ran out into the street, and this is, you know, very long time ago, and got something caught, or her dress or something caught on a streetcar, and it drug her down the street. And when the mother came, there was like hardly anything left to her, you know, face. Not to be gory or graphic or anything. well, out of respect for, you know, the person who passed away. And they were trying to make contact with her as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I know a lot of people are still reviewing their evidence. So it's going to be interesting. Hopefully Haunted Toledo will share that with us pretty soon, because I'd like to see what they've experienced.
Yeah.
Because they've been there before.
Well, they did the real investigation there a couple weeks, I believe it was, before. And the rep asked them if they would like to do something for the Halloween season and introduce ghost hunting to more people.
Yeah, that was
so
cool.
It was neat. And
there was a lot of people there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was nice. I think, you know, I just think people are just starved for knowledge about it. You know, they're curious about it, but they don't want to, like, you know, pay too much to, you know, I don't want to say pay too much, but maybe they're just afraid to like do some haunted prison or you know, like a Waverly for their first time.
That is a lot of effort. You know, you got to drive there, you got, you know, it's not local. And what's neat about it is they gave a little presentation of the tools and the equipment that we use and stuff before.
All right, should we get into the show topic finally?
Oh, we have a topic.
Oh, I'm sorry. We actually have a topic, folks.
Okay.
We really do. Now, this is kind of a deep and dark subject. You know, it's very highly debated, and I don't want to say controversial. It's it's not. It could be.
It could be. And we did cover a little bit in a previous show, but we wanted to come back with just the exorcism part of it.
Yeah.
So. Not the demonology or whatever part of it, but.
Yeah, like, you know, it seems like every time it's around Halloween that it rears its head that, you know, people want to talk about exorcisms and, you know, I know we had a case here in Toledo.
There's been a few, though. The one, there was one popular one. It was on the show The Dead Files. And that house, that's an interesting case because that just proves, you know, that there's a lot more to this than just going to houses and ghost hunting. You know, if a spirit's sitting there going, help me, it's like, hey, it said help me. I'm like, so what did you do? Right. You know, so we had a case here in town, and I'm not going to mention the name of the street or nothing because I don't have it in front of me. So they contacted the TV show. The TV show came out, and the girl said that the house is extremely haunted. They had demons. They had all the stuff. And she left. And there was nothing. It's like, okay, we filmed our show, now we left. Well,
Yeah, where's that leave the family?
But that's the one thing about doing this, you know, when you do your ghost hunting, and that it's not just going to a location and ghost hunting. There's preemptive and postemptive stuff that you right. need to do. So the family got a hold of Toledo Ohio Ghost Hunters Society, and they went in and they did their thing and cleansed the house and basically kind of did an exorcism,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we know that places can be have attachments that need to be exercised. So
yeah. So I wanted to give some information, and we'll just start from the beginning.
All right.
Because, you know, people hear about it, but here's what an exorcism really is.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
It's not the movie,
no.
The Exorcist, which was based on a real life yeah. case, but yeah. you know, Hollywood puts their spin on
oh,
it. So,
yeah.
Okay. So here's a definition of what an exorcism is. Okay. You ready? Here we go.
Bring it on.
All right. So and this is from the Catholic perspective, because
yeah.
typically when you talk about an exorcism, you talk in terms of the Catholic Church. So, all right. But, you know, other religions have their thing too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Can I start now? Okay. I just want to clarify that, because, you know, it's like, I don't want to offend anybody if they're other religions.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Offend away.
Yeah, I've done enough offending this week.
I don't want to know.
Yeah, that's a whole nother, that would be a whole nother show. Okay, so what is an exorcism? The Catholic Encyclopedia defines exorcism as the act of driving out or warding off demons or evil spirits from a person, places, or things which are believed to be possessed or infested by them, or are liable to become victims or instruments of their malice. So in short, it's a ritual that's performed by a Catholic priest to expel a devil from a person, place, or thing. Which is interesting, because, you know, I was telling you before the show, I didn't realize that an exorcism could be on a place or a thing. I thought it was only a person.
Yeah.
So there's several types of exorcisms in the Roman Catholic Church. The first one is a baptismal exorcism, blessing an infant prior to the baptism to cleanse it of all evil resulting from original sin. Don't know what original sin is, but I probably should. Simple exorcism, which is blessing a place or a thing to rid it from the evil influence. And then a real exorcism, which is performing the rite of exorcism to rid a human being of a diabolical possession.
Yeah.
So real, when we, you know, talk about a real exorcism, we're talking about, you know, a priest dealing with a human being who's possessed by the devil. The devil is inhabiting.
That's, yeah.
Oh, my poor listeners. I'm so sorry. I can't pronounce anything because I'm blonde. But okay. No offense to blondes, because I'm not a natural blonde. But hey, that's a whole nother story. Whole nother show. Okay. So in an exorcism, I'm blanking. Okay. So if you've seen the movie from 1973, The Exorcist, you have at least a little bit of idea of what it is.
Yeah.
So you're ridding the human being or person from the diabolical possession. It's typically associated with Roman Catholic beliefs, because, you know, they have been the kind of the lead on, you know,
yeah,
exercising.
Well, you know, the first exorcism ever performed was Jesus and the homeless man.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
the wandering home we mentioned
yeah,
in the
yeah,
last
yeah.
show?
Forget about that.
Or not the last show, but the last show we talked about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. So
he stunk. He had a foul odor.
Oh, okay. So according to the church, here's the telltale signs of demonic possession. They include speaking or understanding languages in which the person has never learned, which is different from speaking in tongues, because that's considered like a sign of religious ecstasy, not possession.
Okay.
All right. Physical strength beyond a person's natural physical makeup. So you turn into the Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm. Turn green. And
sometimes. You never know. Okay. Knowing and revealing things the person has no earthly way of knowing. And then a violent aversion to God, the Virgin Mary, the cross, other images of the Catholic faith or religious faith.
That's the big one.
Yeah.
You know, that's the big one where they get violent because of religious artifacts or religious mm-hmm. people.
Now, it says here, like if you do a Google search on exorcism, you'll find ads for people who, you know, perform these.
Oh, yeah.
They say, I have 30 years experience or 25,000 performed exorcism. But it's actually, according to the Roman Catholic Church, is very rare.
Yeah.
It's like how many, like there's, one in what?
Well, there's actually like one in 5,000 chances of it being a demonic possession,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's actually, according to the Roman Catholic, you know, website that I looked at, it's 11 U.S. exorcists right now. There's only 11 of them,
mm-hmm.
or there could be up to 300 in the whole world.
Yeah.
So
that's only like one per country.
Yeah. And,
you know,
we're dealt with so many people that say, I'm a demonologist. You know, it's like, no, you're not.
You're self-proclaimed.
Yeah. And you're messing with stuff that you don't understand.
A true exorcist has to be ordained from the Catholic mm-hmm. Church. They have to have special training.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one story that was in this book called My Six Popes. It's by a cardinal who reported that Pope John Paul II had performed an exorcism on a woman in 1982. And then there was also reports that Mother Teresa had gone under an exorcism before her death in 1997 because the Archbishop of Calcutta believed she was being assaulted by the devil.
Yeah.
What are you looking at?
Look at the fence post.
We got to take a picture of that. Yeah. So Joe's sitting here. He has an audience of one. His squirrel is still looking at him. We have this little squirrel that likes Joe. It was like your, you know, soulmate in a past life or something. Came back as a squirrel and just sitting here staring at him. Okay. So, you know, with the history of exorcism, mm-hmm. how far back does that go?
Well, possession and exorcism date back to ancient times. I mean, just like mm-hmm. anything else we talk about. I mean, and like I said, the original was during Jesus's time. But they say that Jesus was the first person to give an exorcism.
But if other cultures BC, which mm-hmm. is before Christ, like the Egyptians,
yeah,
were performing some type of cleansing mm-hmm. long before
yeah.
that.
Well, yeah, because I mean, even the shamans used to do it.
Yeah, so they would enter like a trance-like state to find the troublemaking soul and discover a way to end the victim's pain.
Oh, okay.
But with the Catholic Church, you know, they go through a certain ritual, I want to say ritual, but procedure
yeah.
to yeah. make sure that somebody is or is truly possessed. So
yeah,
here's what they do.
Okay.
You want to tell?
Well, I was going to say, you know, a lot of it is just psychological,
mm-hmm.
you know, or attention grabbing.
Sure.
You know, there are people out there that do certain things just to get attention.
Yeah, we know some of them. But, so when somebody reports a possible case of possession in the church, what happens is they do a process of elimination is
okay.
the word that I'm trying to think of. Yeah. So the subject... Do they have the telltale signs of demonic possession? Is there any other explanation for their behavior besides a demonic possession? So often they'll consult a psychiatrist in the investigation and, you know, review the person's symptoms. So, you know, to rule out any type of mental illness. I mean, that's kind of a clear thing in any investigation. If you're doing a proper investigation, you want to make sure, okay, first of all, is this person, you know,
mentally ill or possessed?
Right.
I mean, because we talk about how the demonic side is so little, and it is because you got these people out there that are having mental issues that think that they see demons and everything, and, you know, they need help too, but it's a different type of help.
Sure. And, you know, it for somebody to call themselves a demonologist, you may be a demonologist. That means you study demons. It doesn't mean that you are an exorcist
exactly.
and you have the right to perform an exorcism. If you're not doing it right, who knows what you could unleash?
Yeah.
You know, or what damage you could do to that person.
Or to the family that, you know, you could tell them you have demons in your house when they don't.
Right. And you just have to do your research. So there's a guy who wrote a book called American Exorcism, and his name is like Michael Caneo or something like, I can't pronounce his last name. You know how I am with names. He says that in that book that there's a dozen psychiatrists in the United States who evaluate potentially possessed people for the Catholic Church. They go under medical examinations from physical disorders to illnesses. Once they rule any medical out, then they do the psychological testing. Mm-hmm. And then if a priest, you know, has to consult a church approved expert on the paranormal, you know, they may bring one in. And then they also just have to rule out plain old fraud.
Yeah.
You know, like we just said, the attention getter. So if the priest is convinced that the possession is true and they need an exorcism, so what they have to do is report back to their supervisor, which would be the bishop of the diocese, and to let, you know, say an exorcism is in order.
Yeah, if they need it or not.
So then the church has to decide if they're going to sanction an official exorcism and then appoint an exorcist to the case.
Yeah.
So
it's a huge procedure, and, you know, and it's a good procedure too, because just like our ghost hunting, you don't just, I mean, I keep saying this, but you don't just go into a place and do your ghost hunts. You have to,
there's a difference though.
Yeah.
There's tell the difference between ghost hunting and doing a paranormal investigation.
Yeah, because a regular ghost hunt is like what we do, or like I do. I just go in and we do a ghost hunt.
We pay.
Pay or even, you know, just go into places and hunt for ghosts. But a real paranormal investigation is where you are looking to get evidence to get a response or a outcome that you have in mind, whether it be to find out if the place is actually haunted, to find out if they need an exorcism, or like Michelle does with
like
her cleansing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the big difference is also, I mean, we document a lot, but we're not documenting in a scientific, I guess I am, but in a way that you're trying to get an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Our outcome for me is just to get evidence. An outcome for a regular paranormal investigation is to find out and then do something about that.
Right. And, you know, like, don't get me wrong, we ghost hunt.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I call it.
We enjoy it. It's entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to discredit or you know, in any way, shape, or form, make light of what a paranormal investigation is.
Yeah.
Because there are people who truly need help out there.
Oh, yeah.
They are being attacked. Mm-hmm. You know, even like things of not being able to sleep, that takes a physical toll on your body.
That's an attack of some sort.
Sure. There's people who get attachments. Hello.
Yeah.
You know, so just gotta, even like with an exorcism, there are people who will pay to get rid of it. If you're truly possessed, you shouldn't have to pay.
No.
You need the experts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to get on a soapbox here for a second. But, okay, just talking about having a true demonic possession.
Yeah.
Your average person, average Joe off the street is not going to be able to handle this.
Yeah.
They are not going to have the tools and the equipment to do this. Now, if somebody's coming in and having an attachment or a poltergeist or, you know, maybe just some kind of oppression versus, you know, possession.
Yeah.
Then maybe the ghost hunting groups could come out and help or a paranormal team or, you know, a tranquility specialist.
Yeah, like Michelle.
That's fine and that works for that. But if somebody truly has a demonic demonic possession, why would you mess around with somebody found on the internet versus somebody trained from the Vatican?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like ordering a hot dog and expecting a filet mignon.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a bad example.
What we're saying is, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and we've ran into people that just call themselves demonologists and don't know what they're doing. You need to study. Like Michelle, she has been studying this for years, and she comes in and does a cleansing of a house the proper way.
Right.
It's not something you just do once and you're done, unless it's a really small one, but it takes time. You have to be trained.
Well, they're doing it to help people, not to make profit.
Exactly. So that's why, you know, in your research there, I see that there are a lot of people out there that charge for that, you know, and you can tell that they're out for money because they do it every night.
Yeah. I mean, if the church is saying 1 in 5,000 cases mm-hmm. is actually a demonic possession, listen, these people out there, listen, if you're finding somebody off the internet, do your research too. you know what I mean?
That goes with whatever, like we always say, do your research and find a professional.
Okay. So this is interesting.
Okay.
If the church decides that it has a truly possessed person, you know, on their hands and requires an exorcism, the next step, they have to be appointed an exorcist to the case. And it's often the priest who determined that, but not always.
Okay.
So casting out of the devil is not part of a typical priest's daily routine. Most priests have never performed an exorcism, but a few have.
Yeah.
Okay. So the official numbers are hard to come by, but in 1996, the Catholic Church appointed 10 priests, bringing the total. You said there was 11.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So traditionally, Catholic exorcists undergo very little specific training to aid them. While they know a great deal about the devil and the risks and the manifestations of evil, the exorcism itself is not a specialized area that they get to study when they're in seminary school. Okay. And they know that there is the rite of exorcism, which is a, you know, documented
mm-hmm.
program that they follow. Okay. All right. So what happens is that the priest who's performing the exorcist has to wear his surplice and a purple stole. The ritual of exorcism is a series of prayers, statements, and appeals. So the prayers are loosely broken down into an imploring formula, which the priest asks God to free the subject from the devil, and the imperative, oh my gosh.
Imperative?
Yeah, something like that. Formula, which where the priest demands the name of God, in the name of God, that the devil leave the subject's body. So there's another guy who, he wrote a book, which is kind of controversial to the Catholic Church. He wrote a book called, let me see what his book is, Oh, Hostage to the Devil. That's the name of his book. So he says there are 4 steps to an exorcism.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. I'm going to tell you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. All right. So pretense. So the devil is hiding its true identity in the person. Okay. So they're, you know, starting off with their prayers and, you know, the devil's not making its presence known. Then the break point is where the demon reveals itself. Then the clash, the third step, is the exorcist and the demon fighting for the soul of the possessed. And then the fourth is the expulsion, where the exorcist wins the battle and the demon leaves the body. So this 4-step program, or whatever you want to call it, supposedly caused a big stir in the Catholic Church, because that's not what they say happens. But
okay.
You know, I don't have their rite of, I don't have like the actual rite of exorcisms in front of me. So anyways, there was a Gallup poll.
A Gallup poll?
Yeah, in 2005, that only 42% of people in the United States believe in the possibility of a demon possession.
That's still high, though, 42%.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of like some do and some don't.
Exactly.
So, you know, it goes back to just what are your beliefs, you know? Do you believe it could happen? Have you had it happen to you? It's just like seeing a ghost. Have you seen a ghost? Have you not seen a ghost? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't believe in it because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But.
Have you seen air?
Yeah.
You can't see air, but. There's a couple cases I want to talk about, or a few cases. One of them was Annelise Michel. She was born in 1952 in West Germany. She had a history of mental illness and suffered from epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In 1973, she was 20 years old. Symptoms took a turn for the worse. She grew up depressed and acting out aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
She rejected religious artifacts, spoke of demonic visions. She heard voices damning her to hell. Her parents were convinced that she was possessed, so they called in a bishop, Joseph Strangel. And he actually ended up performing and authorizing an exorcism on her. Nearly seven rituals were performed between 1975 and 1976, allegedly leading to her death.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. An autopsy concluded that she died of malnutrition, dehydration as a result of the exorcism.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah.
That was a tough one. I mean, that's so
it's sad.
She didn't win. You know, she actually died, and kind of makes you wonder what happens in the afterlife with her, you know?
Right. Well, maybe she's set free, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, there was another case, and I'm going to pronounce her name wrong.
That's okay.
On purpose. It's the Schmerl family.
Okay.
The case represents one of the most highly publicized and scrutinized exorcism. In 1974, Jack and Janet say they're malevolent. Jack and Janet said a malevolent presence possessed their West Pennsylvania home. What happens when they had a foul smell? Also, it threw the family dog against the wall,
aww,
pushed the children downstairs, and sexually and physically attacked Jack.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Their story caught the attention of paranormal investigator Ed and Lorraine Warren, who deemed the house disturbed by a very powerful demon. Well, duh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the house, not a person. Yeah.
Well, no, it they said that the house was possessed by a demon. In other words, there was an extremely violent demon in the house.
Okay.
Janet claims that the demon moved through the walls of their double-blocked home during such procedures in 1986 after several long holy blessings and prayers on the part of the family, I can't say Smurls, the force finally subsided, although Janet was still alleging spirit encounters happened in 1987.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it went on forever, just like that story did.
Wah, wah.
Let me read this one here. Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
So even like David Berkowitz, he was a serial killer. He killed serial. Okay, so between 1976 and 1977, serial killer David, son of Sam Berkowitz, stalked the streets of New York City, mm-hmm, claiming six victims and wounding seven more. His motivations were connected to a demonic force named Sam. Mm,
that's scary.
Which the killer first discussed in taunting letters left at the crime scenes. In the note, Berkowitz wrote that Papa Sam was drunk who consumed the human blood.
Ooh, gross. Okay.
This Sam kept Berkowitz locked in an attic, commanded him to go out and kill. It was only the killer's capture in 1977 that Sam's true identity was revealed. The name actually refers to a neighbor's, Sam's, pet Labrador retriever. According to Berkowitz's original confession, the dog was possessed by an accident demon in order to kill him.
Oh my gosh.
So the whole reason he was saying that he's out killing people is because the dog was possessed by a demon, mm-hmm, that told him to kill.
It's interesting because, you know, in our research, we talk about psychology versus religion. You know, you want to make sure that, okay, are these people mentally ill or are they truly possessed? Yeah. In like a case of a serial killer, how do you determine that? You know, it's like,
you really don't. I mean, it's just,
who's to say they couldn't pass this? If they had a smart demon attachment, they couldn't pass the psychological testing.
Yeah.
Or not pass it on purpose so they could get locked up in a mental institution versus prison.
Exactly. And there's a lot of people out there who study serial killers, and that's what they're trying to figure out, because a lot of them will say, oh, I was possessed.
Well, you know, like people who have Tourette's syndrome, they have, you know, uncontrollable shouting, mm-hmm, and involuntary movements, which could be interpreted as, you know, some kind of possession, when we know it's just, you know, something,
a medical issue.
Right. So it's, you know, it's just interesting how do you determine that, mm-hmm, you know, like, how do you rule that out? I don't know if there's any like DNA testing or blood testing that you could do.
And that's all in part of the church. The first thing you do is they talk to a psychologist. There was another case, Clara Keel.
Mm-hmm.
Clara Keel, or Keel, was a 16-year-old orphan girl from North South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
In 1906, she began exhibiting odd behavior. She spoke in an ununderstood language that were previously unknown to her and became a sort of soothsayer.
Okay.
Yeah. So knew about things of people that she never met. Witnesses say that she exuded superhuman strength and could levitate.
Wow.
Okay, this is back in 1906. All right. They also described her voice as twisted into ton of verbal herd of beast orchestrated by Satan. Later, Keel confessed that she had made a pact with Satan and handed her body over to him. A 2-day exorcism was performed, after which seems the evil spirit has been expunged or taken out of her body.
I always ask this question. I don't know why I always ask the same question. Where's the spirit or the demon or the devil go when it gets out of you?
Like Michelle said, it's sent back to where it was supposed to be, either hell or, back to its original place.
We talk about the Catholic side of it. Here's some other reports. There's other religions that have, kind of the same thing going on as the Catholic Church. So in Judaism, the Jewish folklore and Kabbalah teachings of a malevolent spirit is called the Dybbuk.
Yeah. Which the Dybbuk box is in Jack's museum or Zach's.
Oh, God, we're doing good today. Alrighty. So through the rite of exorcism, the Dybbuk is expelled and leaves the body through the person's toe.
That's interesting.
Yeah. In Islam, they have the belief of the jinn, which is an evil spirit and a servant of Satan, and can invade the human body and cause pain and illness and torment, evil thoughts. And they can be expelled by the possessed person by reading particular passages in the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Hinduism, the Vedas scriptures tell of an evil spirit that can not only harm humans, but can also stand in the way of the will of the gods. So traditional Hindu exorcism includes such rituals as burning pig excrement, reciting prayers, and then offering sweets to the god.
Okay.
So if you want to get on my good side and exercise your demons, you can bring me some sweets.
There you go. And then you'll have to go exercise.
Might forgive somebody for being a jerk. To me. You liar. Anyways, that's a whole nother show.
Okay.
We have a lot of other shows that we could talk about, but we won't. So, tell people about, the one of the people that we've interviewed. Possessed by the devil.
Yes, the show is a total possession show.
The devil of the can't speak and can't say and talk.
Yeah, we had the honor to meet Reverend Swoop, and he actually wrote a book about how
we have a possession in our tongue.
But okay. Yeah, he actually wrote a book on how to do exorcisms, and it was like the field guide, if I can remember, mm-hmm. right?
Something like that, yeah. And he was saying that, or has a guide.
I saw him on the news.
I did too.
Yeah, he was talking about the vampire crypt.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So anyways, he wrote a book about being able to do some of this yourself.
Yeah,
which I don't know.
Like a field guide. And when he talked about that when we were talking to him, I was kind of that way too. I was like, oh, what do you mean? But, if anybody can write it, he can.
Yeah.
Because he's a seminary trained exorcist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he... he's done a few of these all over the world. He was in Africa. At one time, he was a mission in Africa. He was in Hell's Kitchen, New York. Stop yawning. Joey saw that. But, he would be a very interesting person to get on and talk about some of his experiences, if he could. There might be some confidentiality clauses. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. If you do this... Do you have to keep it,
Yeah, it's pretty much, it's an unwritten rule that you shouldn't talk about it.
So anyways, if you think you have a possession and you need an exorcism, go to the experts.
Yes.
They will help you. You could call Catholic Charities, I'm sure, and they could point you to the Catholic Diocese and in your local area. point you in the right direction, or, you know, go to your religious background, or, you know, wherever you worship.
Yeah. And, you know, if you don't want to do that route, I mean, you can go to some teams out there. There are some really good teams like Toledo Ohio Ghost Hunter Society that will come in. And, but the thing with them is also they'll do the investigation, but if they decide that you do need a Catholic priest, they'll mm-hmm. bring one in.
Right.
They work with, you know, religious and psychics, you know? So that's what we say, do your research and all that. I know we say it a lot, but do your research and find out the right people for the job.
Yeah, having a bad day or getting pissed off about something is probably not a possession. It could be a symptom if you have a possession, but, you know, like, don't take this lightly. It's very serious.
It is. Very serious. But speaking about being very serious.
Talk to me, Joey.
Me and Jen were talking, and I challenged her, and she doesn't believe that we can do it, but we are trying to get 5,000 likes on our Facebook page by the end of the year.
So it's 60-day challenge.
60 days, and I'm working on it. So we want to ask you guys a huge favor. If you could, please. I know a lot of you guys already like our Facebook page. If you don't, please do it. But tell your friends and prove me right that we can get 5,000 likes by the end of the year.
Challenge. Yeah. Joe versus Jen in the challenge of 2017. So, yeah.
Now, if you find value from this and if you get good entertainment out of us, because that's what we're all about, you know. We'd like to bring our own views in and try to actually make it sound like we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, it doesn't cost you anything.
Nah.
Just like our page.
And you're staring at Facebook anyways.
I know. Like, who isn't on Facebook all day, every day?
So, yeah, share this with your friends, please. And let's see if we can get our page up to 5,000 likes.
Yeah, we're going to try. So definitely, you know, look out too on our Facebook page for contests coming out soon. We're going to give away some cool swag here shortly, coming around the holiday seasons. If you win it, maybe you could, you know, use it as a Christmas gift. You can re-gift it.
There you go.
We won't be offended if you re-gift our gift if you win the prize.
You know, and we're selling our t-shirts online. We got our t-shirts on our website, on eBay, on Facebook. You know, we've got dowsing rods, all that. So
yeah, I mean, if you know somebody who loves the paranormal and is interested, what a better gift to get them for the holiday season is an I Speak EVP t-shirt, a set of dowsing rods, you know, stickers, a copy of my book.
So yeah, anyways, folks, we're gonna have all of our stuff up online this weekend.
Yep.
So if you can, if you want to, buy a shirt.
Yep.
Buy some dowsing rods. Buy some stickers. If you buy a shirt, we'll give you stickers.
That's right.
You know, I'll give you some stickers if you buy a shirt.
Yeah.
But,
You know, just if you like what you hear and you want to support us, this is just small ways that you can support us. We're not asking for, you know, donations. We're just asking that you buy some merchandise or just like our page or share our page, you know. So if you know people in paranormal would like to hear some goofy info brought to you by your local.
And if you guys out there know of any conventions that you'd love to see us go to, let us know, because we're starting to fill up our calendar for next year. And we're looking for places to go.
Yeah, if if you're across the United States or maybe in foreign countries, not that we can afford to go to foreign countries, but somewhere in the United States, and you guys have a really good Paracon or paranormal festival, hit us up on our Facebook page or on our Twitter and let us know. We'll try to get in and book that show and come out and see.
And if you're running the event, if you want to do a trade exchange, we'll advertise the heck out of you for a free table.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to do a little
trade exchange.
Yeah, I mean, we reach a lot of people. So, you know, that's, I think, a fair exchange.
Yeah.
Bring us into the show. We advertise the show.
They get to see me.
Oh, my gosh. That's worth $1 million.
Yeah.
The $6 million man. Did you know? This is funny.
Oh, no.
Okay, rabbit hole. But if you sold all of your body parts individually, like your corneas, your eyes, your platelets, you know, whatever, to science,
yeah,
or organ transplant, it would total up to like $6 million.
Really?
So people, if you don't think you have any value, we're all worth $6 million. So don't steal me.
Yeah. But I was thinking, well, heck, I could raise money that way. I don't need this arm. I don't need this eye. I don't need the...
Yeah, right. Take my toe, please. Toe sucker.
So anyways, folks, thanks for tuning into this mess of a show we had today. We were possessed.
Hot mess. Woo! Yes.
But yeah, so hit us up on Facebook. Tell your friends. And all that stuff. And we will talk to you.
Tweet me.
Next week.
Take care, everybody.
Goodbye. Feelings gone.